Hi, it's Leanne Dolan, and my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical, is out now and available everywhere. People magazine chose it as an April pick of the month, one of the best this week. A hopeful take on commitment, they said, and an innovative story about marriage. Sounds juicy. The Marriage Sabbatical, out now, available everywhere.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood. We are the Satellite Sisters. Welcome to the show. Today is a very special show. We'll explain in a second. I am Liz Dolan. I am the middle sister, and I am here in Santa Monica, California. Super excited for this special celebration for you, Leanne.
Thank you, Liz. I'm happy to be here, too. I'm Leanne Dolan. I am a writer, and today is the publication day for my fifth novel, The Marriage Sabbatical. So thank you and Julie for celebrating with me. Hi, Jewel.
Yeah. Hi there. This is Julie Dolan. I'm the eldest sister. I'm in Dallas, Texas. And Leanne, may I be the first to wish you congratulations. This is your fifth novel. That's exciting. And to think that you only started writing at 45. Are you kind of surprised that you have five published novels now?
I am surprised. Honest to goodness. When I typed that this morning, like, oh, it's my fifth novel, I'm totally surprised, because when I started writing in my mid-40s in terms of fiction, you think maybe you have one book. You don't think anyone's ever going to publish it. You certainly don't think anyone's going to read it. You know, it's just not that kind of thing when you set out to write your first book. And then all of a sudden, Helen of Pasadena, you know, did well. So I got an opportunity to write a second book, Elizabeth, the First Wife.
And those One of my favorites.
I love that book, too. Yeah, I love that book, too. And so those are both, they're not my life stories because I'm not that interesting, but you know what I mean? You sort of run out of material in your own life after like one, maybe one and a half books, but they're like first person romantic comedies. So then I kind of branched out a little bit with The Sweeney Sisters and Lost and Found in Paris. So when I got to book five, The Marriage Sabbatical, I really had to make stuff up. So I can't believe I have five books. This is kind of a different book for me in terms of scope and subject matter. It's about a couple that have been married for 20 something years, and they've just hit kind of a, I don't want to say a wall in their lives, but they definitely need a refresh. They need a refresh in their personal lives, in their work lives, and maybe even in their marriage. So they decide to take a year off from marriage, including their marriage vows. So it's a little bit sexier. It's a little bit more adult than my other novels. But it was really fun to write. I liked it. Exactly, Liz. I've been married 31 years. You know, we're just watching, you know, the British murder mysteries and falling asleep at 9 o'clock on the couch. We're not doing anything near this interesting. So it was fun. It was fun to ask the question, what if, and then to answer it with this book. I enjoyed it.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to get into some of the details in the book, but this is a spoiler-free show. This is for people that have not read the book yet, so we're not going to tell people too much.
Right.
But first, people always want to know about your process, so let's start there before we get into the book details. What is your process for getting a book from start to finish? Because honestly, I cannot imagine sitting alone in a room and making stuff up all day. And then you have to turn around and make it happen in the real world as a thing. You know, you have to get it published and then you have to go out and sell it. I mean, your work hours are crazy. Your timeline is crazy. So, and then you have like, you've got the publisher, you've got the publicist, you've got an agent. It's a lot. It's like you're running a small business, but have to write a book too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, One of the trickiest things, I would say one of the hardest things about writing the book is not making up the story, because that's the fun part. If you're a novelist, right? If you can't make up the story, you should not be a novelist. Just saying, find another line of work.
Okay, that makes total sense.
Solid career advice.
Not a novelist. Never a novelist.
if that is unimaginable to you, there's something else for you to do in the world. But the hardest part is like knowing when you have the idea that you're going to have to sit in a chair 8 hours a day, long stretches of time for months at a time to complete it. Because I'm not a super fast writer. I'm an efficient writer, but not super fast. And still, to get to 90,000 words, there's a certain number of hours you have to spend in your chair to get that completed. But for instance, in terms of this book, I conceived of the idea and sold it in 2021.
Really?
Yeah,
wow. I didn't know it was that far back. Okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I've been mulling this around for 10 years, at least a book on marriage of this sort. And then, but in terms of this particular one, like in the middle of the pandemic, I remember, you know, sitting on my couch in the living room during lockdown, like, boy, don't we all need a marriage sabbatical? So then the publisher bought it, and then a few months later, I was still working on Lost and Found in Paris at the time. So then the publisher bought it, and then I started it in 22 and finished it in 23. And that is writing a first draft and a second draft and doing all the corrections and the copy edits and approving the back cover copy and the, you know, the flap copy, everything like that. And then it's published in 2024. So it's a long haul. Like you're living and breathing the book for a long haul. When I'm in the middle of it, you know, this one, I got a big jump start, but then I had to take a pause because sometimes life interferes, or we do a Satellite Sisters podcast, other things are happening. So I really, the last 8 weeks of like, before I turned in the first draft, I have never worked that hard on a piece of fiction, just like 10, 12 hours a day sitting there.
Did you ever get sick of the idea or sick of the book?
No.
That's interesting.
No. Okay. Again, I think if that's the case, you're probably not writing an interesting book. That's also a sign.
Yes.
Okay.
Listen to that. If you hear that in your head.
Yeah. But I think it's that point like, oh, I can see it, but it still takes me X hours a day to get. I write about 12. A good day of writing for me would be about 1,200 words, right? That's for me, that's a lot of words. Usually I'm down around 1,000. So, and then there's the rewriting and everything. So sometimes you're like, oh, I can get there. But you look down and you're like, oh, I'm only at 60,000 words. I got 30,000 more to go. Like you see the end in sight. So, you know, you can't. I worked a lot of weekends this year, the last couple of years.
Did.
I just worked a lot of, a lot of weekends, a lot of days, because I would do the podcast Monday and Tuesdays and then write the other days of the week. So, but I was happy with it all along. I was having fun with it all along. And I do outline a lot. You know, when I sold this book, I had a 10-page pitch document, right? You had the beginning, the middle, the end, the characters, some dialogue, some scenes, but still things change along the way. And that's the fun part. Like that means you're really in the groove when you're like, oh, this is a better idea. Oh, this can happen. Oh, this would be more fun. Like, you know, while still keeping the basic structure. So it's not like you're just filling in words to fill out your outline. You know, the magic happens when you're really kind of deep in the writing. So that's...
Yeah, I know you've confessed before that you also work out some of your material when you're walking your dog, right?
Yeah, like, not a lot.
Dialogue.
Right. And I also, like many people, I don't know what it is about the magic of the shower. I get a lot of good ideas in the shower. So it's not unusual just for me to like go take a shower at 11 a.m. to try to knock some ideas loose in my head.
Maybe you could remodel your office, Land, and put a big shower right in there. That'd be great.
Julie, I like it. So, and then, you know, as you said, the publisher is on their timeline. And so this book has essentially been done since last September, but the publication date that works at their schedule, and they have to get all the art department and the advertising and the marketing and the printing and the distribution all lined up. So that's why it takes a while. That's why publishing is not a business that is It does not turn on a dime. It's not very zeitgeisty. You can't really jump on trends because you could look like an idiot 3 years later. But I do have to say, you know, when I know we're in the next segment, we're going to talk a little more about the actual plot of the book. And this was one where I feel like I was ahead of the trend when I pitched the book. And then all of a sudden, there've been a lot of discussion about open marriages and about, you know, different generations and their interpretation of marriage, or will they ever get married, or relationships. Mm-hmm. So it sort of felt on point as I was writing it.
So, Leanne, it's a pretty closely held project. I mean, you've been very nice, and you have let your sisters, Liz and I, have read drafts, but not the final book yet. But now today is your publication day. Do you still get nervous about that the book is coming out and now you're setting it out into the world and lots of people are going to read it and react to it?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. I mean, people could hate it. You know,
I don't think.
People are not going to hate it, but an occasional person could hate it. That's what would bug me. That anyone gets to say whatever they want about my work. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, that is one thing I've learned over the years. And I think we learned with Satellite Sisters, too. The good news and bad news about being a creative is that people can just tear your work apart, as you said. Like, what, 1 star on Amazon because the packaging was ripped, and there's like nothing you can do about that. But also just this idea that people get to weigh in on everything you do. I've grown a pretty thick skin, but you guys know we'll get 99 fantastic comments and 1 bad comment, and that it's the 1 bad comment you remember, right? So that there's just like a natural tendency, I think, for a lot of creatives to catastrophize, especially when it's like finally out. I mean, it's not a rollout. Yeah. It's like, oh, like a lot of people are going to be reading it at once and judging it. So that's okay. You know, I've gotten pretty used to that. This is, as I said,
you've already gotten some really good reviews.
I've gotten some great reviews.
Yeah.
And then some people are going to hate it, Liz. And that's, but that's the nature of any creative work. Like you think about the books you've started that everyone loved and you were like, this really isn't for me. So I would maintain that if you're writing a book that everyone loves, it's not going to be a great book. Like you have to sort of take a point of view and pick a lane and go for it. So, and then the nervousness is just like, oh, wow. Then you have to meet people. You spent, you know, 3 years with this book, basically alone in your office. And then you have to go out into the world and field questions and talk to people. And they're going to ask things. And
you're really good at that, Leanne. I think there are authors that would prefer to be alone in their room, but you excel at both. You are great talking about books and answering questions and being with people. So, you know, I know we're going to talk about that later in this episode, but, you know, getting out and sharing your work with people seems to be something that gives you a lot of positive energy.
It does. I will say that's true, Liz, and something I really missed during the pandemic. I mean, there was only so many times I could just scream into a Zoom screen and, and to try to connect with people. But it's still nerve-wracking. Still very, very nerve-wracking because, you know, because it's personal, it's your work, but also it's your career. Because the truth is, in publishing, like, you can get to write more books if you sell books. Like, you don't, you know, you're not going to get another publishing contract if you don't sell enough books. So there's
a business in it.
Yes, there's a real business in it. Yeah.
You think this time, just one final question. Do you think you're going to get a lot of questions about marriage? And are you going to be providing marriage counseling, marriage advice as part of your book tour?
Yes, I'm going to get a lot of questions about marriage. One of the things, Julie, honestly, that I've learned, I think it's one of the harder things to learn when you're a fiction writer is to let go of the material that it's not personal and to really not judge your characters. Like you have to be willing to let your characters do things you would never do, whether that's rob a bank or, you know, smoke a cigarette or decide to open up their marriage because they're bored or they're, you know, they just want out for a year. You know, you have to be willing to let your characters do things you would never do. And that takes a while. I remember one editor saying to me, "You are being too cautious with your main character. You're being too protective." And I thought that was really like key advice. So you know, I'm willing to talk about marriage because goodness knows I've thought a lot about it because I've been married for 31 years. and I did a lot of reading before I started this book on marriage and all kinds of aspects of it because I wanted to get this, particularly this first 100 pages, right? So you're invested in these characters' lives. So you as the reader might not judge either. Like even if they're doing something you would never in a million years do, you can still enjoy their story. So
I think that's what makes it fun to read.
Yeah.
Because it is something you wouldn't do. Well, yeah. We don't know what you would do.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
that's
how much
point,
is
Liz.
Fiction. Julie will never know how much she made up, right?
I know. I mean, I think she's going to answer a lot of questions on that topic.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that's okay. I've been working on that. I've been working on that.
Okay.
Okay. Well, now we're going to come right back and we're going to dig into the book itself, the story, the characters, the action. It'll be very fun.
Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life. Aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils, I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the Mega Moisture Duo.
Yes.
You can literally see your skin get firmer and it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz. Your youthful yeah. glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria Seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
And we are back. So, Julie, you can lead off the conversation about the book itself.
All right, Leanne, The Marriage Sabbatical. Where did this idea come from?
All right. You know, as I mentioned, I've been thinking about marriage for a long time. And the original spark, I mean, many years ago, was a guest we had on Satellite Sisters, probably 20 years ago.
Really?
We had, yeah, I know. I am occasionally deep. I'm an occasional deep thinker, Jill.
Well, I'm just surprised you can remember a guest from 20 years ago. So keep going, Leah.
Yes. So we had Professor Stephanie Kuntz on. She had written a book called Marriage, A History. And she's a noted historian and a commentator, like, you know, cultural commentator. And she talked about the idea that this view we have of marriage, of romantic love, of one person, of fidelity, of a lifetime commitment, is relatively new in the scope of human history. It's only a couple hundred years old. You know, prior to that, and we sort of, you know this in your heart, like, because we know that kings married to, you know, to inherit land and get some cows and, you know, get some soldiers. But even normal people did that too. So we are basically living like a giant social experiment, Joel. I don't want to that's relatively new and sort of untested. And I remember that really struck me as like unbelievable, as if why didn't anyone tell me this, you know, before I got married? So with that in mind, I always just thought marriage is an interesting relationship. And you know, the more you're married, you know, you sort of buy into this idea of like, we just have a lot of equity together now. We have emotional equity. We have financial equity. We have social equity. Like, we should probably stick together. And marriages go through ups and downs and good years and bad. I just thought it was a really interesting topic. And I didn't think that there were a lot of portrayals of good marriages in either like books or TV. There's a lot of portrayal of bad marriages, yeah, right? Yeah. That's easy to write. I've written them. It's fun, you know, chaos and conflict. But what does an essentially good marriage look like? You know, and can you write about that in an interesting way? And then I was having coffee with an old friend of mine, and we were just catching up on things. And she'd been married for about 20 plus years at the time. And I was like, so, you know, how are things going with so-and-so? And her spouse. And she said, you know, I like being married. I just wish I could date occasionally.
Really?
Yes. And I thought that was like right there. I was like, that's a novel. Like figuring out a way to write that, because that's not, it just, you know, I think if you've been married a long time, you sort of understand what that means. Like, oh, yeah. So that's when I started messing around with this idea of how could I write about a good marriage that has had good years and bad, where they just need a break. But I essentially wanted to write about a marriage, you know, not necessarily about an open marriage. But this idea that this couple, Jason and Nicole, had made it to 23 years. They, you know, had been through some stuff like every couple. And at 23 years, he had a work sabbatical that he was entitled to, that he had postponed because of the pandemic. And then he suffered some tremendous loss, and they were supposed to go away together. And what they realized was she didn't want to go on his sabbatical to Patagonia. She wanted to go to Santa Fe, but they basically wanted to kind of rediscover who they were before they said, I do. And so that was the book I set out to write.
Okay, so you mentioned your main characters are Nicole and Jason.
Yeah.
So where did they come from in your mind?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I wanted to write some Gen Xers. That was important.
Oh, they're so Gen X. They,
yes.
Yes. Everything, right. Don't you think, Julie?
Oh, I mean, yes.
Because Julie and all the boomers.
No,
when it comes to Gen X, she's constantly throwing it in our face. Yes.
Right.
Nicole and Jason, 100% Gen X.
And just doing inexplicable things. In my mind.
Yeah. See, that was the point. I do think there's a generational difference to people's attitudes about all kinds of things, but sort of marriage and self-identity and recreation would be one of them. But Nicole, you know, I literally like figured out the years I wanted them to be born. I looked up the most popular names that year and I named them Nicole and Jason because those were the two most popular names on the year I picked it out. Like I wanted them to be right in the demo. And so they grew up in different ways. Nicole spent her career in retail. She sort of, you know, paid for her own college, like got out of a not a great family situation, moved to Portland and stayed. Jason is a, you know, he grew up in a wealthier family in San Francisco, but now he lives in Portland, Oregon as well. And he is in publishing and has sort of a meteoric career in publishing. So, you know, those were the basis for those two, but I wanted them to be on brand in terms of the generation, but then you have to figure out who they are as people, which is the fun work of doing the creation, the character creation is what I like the best. So all throughout the book, you see where they are now in present day, but you also see flashbacks of their marriage. So you kind of throughout the years. So you understand how they got to the point of where they got to. And you get to know them better as people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I like how they met, what their romance was like before they got married, all of that. I loved all of that stuff. So, you know, your books always, you have a super strong sense of place. I know you pay a lot of attention to details like that. Obviously, Helen of Pasadena, Mary Pasadena, Paris in Lost and Found in Paris, Ashland, Oregon, and Elizabeth the First Wife. So this book basically is largely set in Portland, Oregon, and Santa Fe. So, which happened to be two of my favorite places too. So
yes.
Why did you pick those two cities?
Well, you know, Liz, you and I, we all lived together in the city of Portland in the late 80s, early 90s. You know, when Portland...
The glory years.
It was the glory years before Portland was a hipster town, before the food carts. You know, it was like slowly transitioning from a timber town to a sort of a creative town. And it was still cheap to live in. It was still a little bit gritty and dirty. And do you remember just how we cried when they announced they were putting a Saks Fifth Avenue in? Like, that was a sign. That was a sign.
You didn't like that direction for Portland?
No, we liked it.
Happy tears, Julie.
We were happy tears, Julie.
Because we just needed one outpost.
One decent store. And now there are many, but it was like, oh my gosh, that made our day. But I just am very nostalgic about that time. I love my 20s. You know, it was a time I lived in a cool neighborhood in a cheap apartment. I could go to a ton of movies, see a lot of music. I would just park my car on the weekends and walk all over town. And so I have a lot of nostalgia and love for Portland. And I kind of wanted to revisit that. And so that was a great excuse to. Also, I thought like people from Portland might be open to marriage sabbaticals. You know, they'd be open, right?
Yeah. So okay. So now you're selling the idea. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
They were open, Liz. It's a question of openness. Okay. I'm not an advocate. And then Santa Fe was a place that I had been to only a couple times when I was in college, because our brother Dick lived there, and I was in college in California. So I went for one Thanksgiving, and another time I was driving back out to school and with my friend Andy, and we stayed for like 4 or 5 days. And it was just a magical place then. You know, Santa Fe is a lot like New Orleans in the sense that it feels like you're in a different country when you're there, you know, there's so many cultures. There's such a strong spiritual vibe. There's like a great artistic and cultural vibe. It's beautiful. It's relatively small. You know, it's not a big town. So you could move there and kind of absorb right into the community right away. So I also romanticized Santa Fe, like that would be a good place that she could escape to. And part of the book is I wanted them to feel like they were in their own worlds. I thought that was important, that, you know, for them to really make this transition and to grow and make the changes they needed to make, they needed to feel like they were on their own, where they couldn't even envision their spouse with them.
Right.
Because they had created their own life there. So then when I was researching the book, I was about halfway through when I went and spent a week in Santa Fe, and it's
talked beautiful. About it on the podcast.
Yeah. Yes. So I'll put a link to that show in the show notes, but it's just a very special place. So I was glad I picked it because it just really fit perfectly into the scenario of the book.
Yeah. And I know we have Satellite Sisters who live in Santa Fe who have been helpful researchers and guides for you.
Yeah. 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 We're trying to cook up a book event too when I'm there in June. So we're working on something.
That's great.
Well, we also spent time in Patagonia. Where were we the inspiration for that part of the book, Leanne?
Yes. Yes, you were. We have a mutual friend's husband who did like a motorcycle trip through Patagonia. And I thought that sounded ridiculous. And then when you guys went to Patagonia.
Liz and I went on a hiking trip in Patagonia. Yeah.
Which sounded worse. I don't know what would be worse, hiking or motorcycling for days in like a windy, remote, cold country.
It was a spectacular trip, Liz, right?
It was.
Most memorable of my life.
But maybe not for everyone. Maybe Nicole was not fantasizing about that. That was your point, right, Leanne?
That was my point.
Her fantasy of a year off.
Right. That was my point. And again, for Jason, it served because it was really remote, you know, spotty communications, completely different world than he was used to. You know, he was used to sitting at a desk and he had to kind of, you know, it was a very physical trip for him. And so I thought that worked as well. But also it was a trip like in a million years, I couldn't imagine going on. So that's why I picked. And Patagonia is also pretty exotic sounding. So that worked as well.
Yeah. All right. Another thing I loved in the narrative is that Nicole is super tight with her female friendship circle. So in effect, her satellite sisters.
Yeah.
And they call each other the wolf pack, which is just great. I love that. And so I thought it was really fun that you explore important relationships to Nicole other than just her husband. Why was that important for you to do?
Well, I like writing about friendships because I think it is. I mean, We haven't been doing Satellite Sisters for 24 years and to not understand that that's how women make decisions. They bounce ideas off their friends. They need the support of their friends or the feedback from their friends. You know, she has learned a lot from her friends because she grew up. She was did not have a sophisticated upbringing, but she managed to educate herself in sort of much more sophisticated circles to operate in the retail world in Portland. And her friends are from, you know, different parts of the world, and they have different professions, and they were part of that education. And I like that they were her mom friends, you know, that she was sort of disoriented as a mom. They did the, you know, the pregnancy was unexpected at the time. So she needed people to support her. And so I just thought they added a lot. Plus, I always enjoy writing my, you know, secondary characters because they're just fun to write. I love writing the dialogue for scenes like that. I
oh
like
my God, there's one LOL moment, Leigh, that where one of the friends, I mean, you need a friend to say stuff like this to you. It's such a Satellite Sisters thing to say. The friend says something like, well, let me get this straight. You're going to let your husband sleep with whoever he wants because you don't want to make dinner for a year? That's what's happening here?
So true.
It's so true. The tyranny of dinner will force you into lots of different situations.
That's right. So, yeah. I mean, it allows, like, you know, it also allows, just in terms of a writing structure, it allows you to see Nicole in another context and have those kind of dialogues, Liz. Have that sort of scenes where people might question or support her choices. So also, well,
It makes Nicole more likable. Can I say that she has these good friends?
Yeah. Yeah. You can say that. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's part of my review.
Yeah. 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 She's, and I liked, and, you know, at the same time, she always is a little bit different than they are. You know, she's from a different background than most of them. So, yeah, I enjoyed the wolf pack. And of course, because it's Portland, they're all runners. They do a morning run together. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of keeps them together over the years.
Okay. Well, we mentioned also the Gen X power of the story. And part of that, always with you, you are so great with, like, the cultural and pop cultural references in all of your books. So this is, there's Nirvana, there's Soundgarden, there's Elliott Smith. Like, why is this so important to you to get those Gen X details right?
Well, you know, I mean, it's every book. So whatever your generation is, I do try to sprinkle a few grounding elements in. I mean, as for a writer's trick, it's like a cheap way to ground the story in, you know, the real world, right? In a time and place and a mood.
And it's character revealing.
It is.
They listen to. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's fun. Like, it's what I would absorb, information I would absorb if I was meeting somebody for the first time. You know, are they wearing Winona Ryder deep red lipstick? Is that what they're doing? Is that, what is their perfume? You know, what are they listening to? What magazines do they love reading? Like, those are details I would absorb in people naturally. And so I like to sprinkle them throughout the book. I hope it's not too heavy handed. I hope it's just fun and adds to the story.
Oh, no. To me, that's the part of your books that I love the most. These little details. I love how you ground them.
Yeah. And so it's fun. So you end up kind of, you know, for listening to playlists and going back in, and, you know, I could spend hours, like, there's a lot of, because Nicole's in retail, I had to do a lot of fashion digging, like, you know, what were men wearing in 1992? And so then you're just going down a rabbit hole of, like, GQ magazine photo spreads and things like that. And you know, the internet is a miracle. I mean, I don't know how people did it before. Maybe they just didn't. But there's just, you can find anything you want somewhere by just asking a question, whether it's Reddit or the Vogue archives. And sometimes what I'll do is, you know, stop and do the research right when I'm writing. Another time I'll just know, oh, I need to get the name of a men's suit designer. So I'll just put, like, five X's in the document so that I know when I'm going back for the rewrite to get that detail. There are times when I don't want to spend the time researching it. While I'm writing, I just want to keep finishing the scene to plow down on my word count. And then other times where I like the break of, like, let me go to Rolling Stone magazine and see what the, you know, top 100 songs for 1996 were. So that is the fun part of the book.
Yeah. And Julie, I think you and I agree. It really makes them real people, you know, because you understand these details of your life that relate to the details in your life. Okay. We're going to move on. Next up, we are going behind the scenes of a book tour. So today is pub date for you. Tomorrow you have the big event of Romans, but we want to hear about how you do this, what you do, how this gets organized. People are always very curious. So we're going to be right back with the behind the scenes of the Marriage Sabbatical book tour.
No, thanks, Liz.
Okay, so we are back. So I think everybody knows the tour, book tour now, but they don't really know what it is. And I've been shocked watching you publish these various books, like how much of the work that you personally do. A book tour makes it sound like somebody's going to lead you around and but you figuring out where do you want to be? How can you talk to the right people? You know, what cities are worth visiting versus other ways of reaching out to people? So how do you prep for a book tour, Lee? And like, who pays for that? And how do you figure out what cities are important?
Well, I think people's imagination, image of a book tour is Sex in the City, right? She would go to places and she would look great and they would just magically, whisk her to places. And it's a full seating in wherever she is and you're talking and then you're signing thousands of books and people are hosting book parties. And, Liz, it did used to be like that. I mean, remember in 2001 when we went on a book tour, publishers paid for that piece of it.
Yes.
In the marketing budgets, those just don't exist. Those kind of fancy book tours, unless you really are like a top 5% of novelists, they're going to send you wherever you want to go. You're Stephen King, where would you like us to send you? Ann Patchett, go wherever you want, Ann. But for the rest of us in what they call the mid list, the middle of the list, Liz, we're just scrambling to put stuff together. And so, the bottom line is they're all self-funded. So I have to pay for everything. And so you have to do the economics in your head. Like if I go to a city, if I buy a plane ticket and park the car at the airport and take the Uber and maybe have to stay at a hotel, can I put together enough events to offset that cost in terms of book sales or publicity, or there's a marketing value? And you have to, some are real hard numbers and others are numbers that you imagine would be helpful. Like if you're doing an event for a very well-connected bookstore on the East Coast and they're, putting you out in their, their electronic flyer that goes to 25,000 patrons, then sure, maybe it is worthwhile to get on a plane. So these are the kind of things you have to balance when you discover where to go to a book tour. So I love when people post and say, oh, why don't you come to, and then they name a wonderful city. And I'm like, because it's just, I can't get anything going there because even bookstore visits now, publishers do not set up. They are not worth it anymore.
See, that really surprised me. Well, I know that bookstores have thinned out. You are lucky to have the support of a fantastic bookstore in Pasadena, Romans. You are a hero at Romans, Lee.
Yeah. And they're a hero to me. Like we have a great relationship for a big indie bookstore. But that's an outside publicist I hire. The publisher does not set up any bookstores anymore because they don't feel like it's worth the... It was worth the money because, again, they said even big authors will go and there'll be 25 people there on a Tuesday night.
You just never know whether it's going to be, one person is going to show up or 50, right?
Right. So I do a few bookstore appearances, just especially in markets, maybe where that's the best place for me to be. Or again, it's valuable to be in the window of this particular bookstore. But otherwise, most of the speaking I do is at like organized luncheons and book festivals and author festivals and things like that, where there's just bigger crowds where a bookstore is going to sell the books there, but I'm not doing a bookstore appearance. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of things that I do.
And it's such a pity, Leon, because we talked about it in an earlier segment. Some authors, they're just not good public speakers. That's just not their thing. Yeah. They're writing. But you have that combo, Leon, right? That you write the books, but then your book talk is always so interesting and so revealing and thoughtful and I think people always learn something when they come to hear you talk. So
thank you, Jill. Well, yeah, I work really hard. So yeah, I would love to go a million places, but it is just sort of balancing the cost. And then sometimes you get lucky and you get invited to things where they pay travel, or maybe there's a little bit of an honorarium. So, you know, that works. But just like flying into a city where you don't know anyone, appearing at a bookstore and then flying out, that just, I can't afford
that.
Those
days are over.
But yeah, those days are over. But, you know, I'm going to Dallas. We put together a great event at a bookstore there. Julie is hosting. You know, she has her people there. We have great Satellite Sisters there. And then my friend Melissa is going to do something at her house in Fort Worth. That's new, but that's a double worth going in. Like, okay, yeah, I've got two events.
Yeah, double. Well, we have two cities. Yeah.
That yeah. Makes, yeah. Yeah. Two events in two cities. Yeah.
And you have quite a reputation in Dallas. Yeah. That you've been here before with your other books. People love your books. And so we're going to put together a good show for it's at Interbang Bookstore, which is a wonderful independent bookstore in Dallas. So very excited about
it. Yeah. In May.
Yes.
So I've learned a lot of lessons over the years. Some have been great. And for me, like the sweet spot is I do a lot of luncheons at various organizations and clubs, particularly April, May, and June. They're all having their spring luncheons. And I do a lot of those, and those are great for me. But those are not necessarily open to the public. So it's a combination. Mm-hmm. If I'm in town to do one of those, then I'll try to do something that's free and public that anyone can go to. Mm-hmm. But it is a lot of work, Liz. Yeah, it's a lot of work behind the scenes.
I mean, you should see Lynn with a hand truck moving those books around, okay? And she doesn't like anyone else to touch the books, right, Lynn?
It's not. I don't know why you say this every time. The books are very heavy. Okay?
Yes, they are, Lynn.
So when 75-year-old committee ladies come at me and want to pick up the books, I don't want to kill them, Jill.
Okay.
I don't want a broken hip. So,
okay.
It's just.
I'm kidding.
But you don't have no idea. Like, and then people think the books are decorations and they'll start spreading them around. And like, they're my merch. My merch. And I like to keep my hands on the merch. But I don't do too much selling of my own books. On this tour, I'm not selling any of my own books.
But,
so we have bookstores and everything servicing all the events, which is good.
Okay. Well, I know your first public presentation is the big Romans bash tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've thought about this. Obviously, the first question from any audience anywhere is going to be, is this about your marriage?
Yeah.
They're going to want to know, how fictional is this, Lee and Dolan?
Right.
And maybe your husband's in the audience at Romans and they're all watching him. So what's your good answer to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna let people come to the book talk before I give the actual answer in the air. Okay.
That's a good tease, Leah.
Just know that I have done nothing but think about this for the last 2 months. How I'm gonna answer that question and how I'm gonna position this. Cause I have to say, like, in my mind, this was a book about two people in a marriage. Like, it was the story of a marriage, not necessarily the story of an open marriage.
Yeah.
I know that sounds crazy, but you know, it's a very character-driven book. So then when I got the PR, the publisher sends you a whole bunch of questions when they first start working on your book. Your publicity person sends you all these questions, hoping to elicit interesting answers that they can then spin into a pitch to get your book places. And the first 8 questions were about, like, are you a believer in open marriage? Do you practice open marriage? What do you think of polygamy? Like, oh my gosh. I was like, is that the book I wrote? I didn't even know I wrote that book.
So, well, I think we could say no. I mean, we don't really know what goes on in that marriage. Yeah. No.
Yeah. I mean, the book is a novel. So of course it's fiction, but believe me, I have thought long and deeply about that. And I prepare for these talks because.
Yes, you do, Liam. Yes.
Because I do want them to be interesting, Julie. I want people to come away having a sense of where the book came from and what I learned from writing the book. And the truth is every book I learned something different. I mean, it's a journey for me. You know, I use that word lightly, but it's a journey for me as well as the reader. And so I have absolutely prepared for that question list. So you don't have to worry.
Well, I'll be in the audience tomorrow, so I'll hear the answer.
Oh, I didn't know you were coming. Someone asked if you were coming. I was like, I don't think so. Okay, great.
I think I'm going to make it. Yeah. I mean, LA is a double too, because you're doing the Romans, and then because nobody in Pasadena would ever drive to the west side of LA, and nobody in the west side would ever drive to Romans. I'm having a party for you next week, so we can cover the waterfront a little bit.
But yes. Yeah.
I thought I would come. Sounds fun.
Okay, great.
Yes, you should come and support. So, Leanne, where are you going, and how can Satellite Sisterhood support you in this book tour and supporting your writing? Tell us.
Okay. I'm so thankful for everybody in the Satellite Sisterhood that has pre-ordered the book and has been excited about it and has posted great things on their social media. I cannot tell you how important word of mouth is for an author like me. You know, you posting or telling your friends about the book or showing up in an event is absolutely huge support, and I appreciate it. The other ways that people don't think about, but you can, if you're a library user, you can request my book at your library. That's fantastic. If you want to buy one copy, buying it at your local independent bookstore is a great way to alert the book buyer there that this book exists. You never know. You know, those are small stores usually. They don't carry every book that comes out. So if you go in and order it and tell them, oh, yeah, I'm excited about this book, it's about X, Y, and Z, they may go, oh, I think I'll order five copies. And then word of mouth gets spread. So I appreciate everyone listening to this podcast who has done that in the past or plans on doing that in the future. Fantastic. Picking it from your book club, for your book club, so great. I'm happy to drop in on book clubs. You can find information on that at leandolan.com. Happy to do that if you pick it for your book club pick.
And then Julie, don't you think it makes a fantastic book club book? Because there's so much to talk about.
What did I say, Leanne, when I read the book? I said, this is a juicy book club pick. Okay.
Yes you did.
That was my quote. Because I think it's going to elicit a lot of conversation about marriage, about relationships, and then about Santa Fe.
I know. People just want to go to Santa. I know.
Exactly. Anything in Santa Fe sounds good. Yeah.
So if it's a book club pick, great. Contact me through the website, leandolan.com. If I can do that, I'm hosting a couple of those virtual book clubs that I've done in the past, Liz and Julie, on Crowdcast. So once you read the book in May, all of this is on my website. We'll spread the links around. There'll be a link in the show notes here where I'm going on my book tour for the next 3 months. If you hear your city, take a look at the events listing. It is Pasadena, doing events in, I'll be in Fullerton this weekend, Julie, your old stomping ground.
Yes.
At an author festival at Cal State Fullerton. Tickets are still available for that. I'll be in Oakland, California at a beautiful bookstore in the Montclair area called A Great Good Place for Books. I'm going to be in Carlsbad, California in mid-April doing a fun like happy hour night in Carlsbad. That's on the website. Also, then we mentioned Dallas and Fort Worth. Those are both open to the public. I will be in Portland, Oregon, for sure in June. I also just got booked to actually work with Mary Kay Andrews in New Jersey. So that's
fun. She's so fun. That's
a great writer and just such a great person. Yes.
She loves your books. She's constantly posting about how much she loves your work.
Yes. So that was that's in mid-May. So I know I'll be in Spring Lake, New Jersey at Liz. You'll appreciate this. The name of the bookstore hosting the event. Thunder Road Books.
That's down the shore, Spring Lake. Yeah.
Yep. So that's May 18th. So I'm around a lot. I'm moving. And then, as I said, trying to set something up in Santa Fe for late June. So those are the places I'll be. But, you know, even like I would say this, if you are listening to this podcast on Spotify, I checked this morning, you know, if you're a Spotify subscriber, you get one free audiobook a month and The Marriage Sabbatical is there. You can download it right away. Yep. That can be your free book this month. Yep. Yeah. So there are lots of ways, but I just am so appreciative of all the support and I hope people like it. If you like it, a nice review is good. And if you see those bad reviews, don't like those. Click on the other good reviews so the bad review goes down. Okay. So it's not
good tip, Liam. Yeah.
Oh, that's so great, Leigh. And well, most of all, it's so exciting. You've done it again, putting another book out into the world. I mean, Julie, you and I watch what Leigh goes through, how much work goes into this. It's just an amazing thing that you've already accomplished. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks.
We are so proud of you, Leigh. You know, we don't say that enough in terms of your writing and what you've done and the hard work you've put in and the joy that it brings to you and to all of us. So thank you very much. And keep writing, sister.
Thank you. I will.
So do we have a to-do list this week? I have something on my to-do list.
Okay. What's that, Liz?
As I mentioned, I am hosting a party. Luckily for me, my friend Vishare, who also knows Leigh very well, offered to host the whole thing in her backyard. So thank you, Vishare, for doing that.
That is lucky. That's great.
Because my two-bedroom apartment's not ideal for this kind of thing, for like a big fun party. But it has a little bit of a Santa Fe theme, Jewel, you know, because I wanted to go with that. So the signature cocktail... We're calling it a margarita theme, but the spicy Santa Fe sabbatical will be our signature cocktail.
Oh, that's fun, Liz.
Yes.
I like that. I may steal that idea for my Dallas party. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. No, all right.
I mean, okay. I hired an actual bartender. She has invented the cocktail and will be making it. So believe me, I'm not doing it, but I think it is time now to actually purchase the stuff that goes into the cocktails. So,
oh, fantastic. That's, yeah, that sounds great.
Yes. Spicy Santa Fe sabbatical.
I love it. Oh, I love that.
Leigh, and I also know you like a nice Paloma. So that's the backup drink.
Okay, great. Paloma. Fantastic. Great.
So that's it.
All right. Well, my to-do is actually to go to the Interbang bookstore and any other independent bookstore I can find here in Dallas. I'm going to buy a few more copies of Sabbatical Land. I'm going to get a little trend, a mini trend going. Yeah.
You know what, Julie? Say what you will. Sometimes in regions, does not take that many copies to land on the bestseller list in a region. So, okay. One or two, spreading the book purchases around, buying one or two extra copies, they add up, Julie. That's some excellent work you're doing. I appreciate that.
You know, Leigh, and I always like to have extra copies of your books, of our books in my home, because it's such a great gift. Anytime you go places, you want to say thank you to someone, you go to a party, you're going over for dinner, bring the marriage sabbatical and start some controversy at the dinner party. Just think about it.
Just that line about the dinner, that's going to sell some books and stir up some controversy at your next dinner party.
Yes. What would you do to not make dinner for a year?
All right. Okay.
New rule.
Discuss. Yes.
Okay, Leigh, what's your final to-do before you set out on the book tour?
Okay, well, you know, tomorrow I'm getting my hair blown out, so that's good. Going to my stylist, Trina, who's been styling my hair for 26 years. And Liz, I'm literally arranging my outfits because I have so many stops that I've cleaned out my closet and I've cleared one, you know, it's like a rolling rack, basically,
good,
of book tour clothes. And I'm getting them all organized so that every time I leave the house, it's not a scramble. That's it. I'm trying
some packing cubes, Ziploc bags, Leigh, put it all together. I like it. That's
exactly right, Jill. That's happening.
So there's no stylist involved who's pulling things for you. It's all there.
No, it's, you know, I do. No, there's no.
I know you like to go with the color scheme of your book cover.
She does her own styling. Yes.
I know. No. Oh, she's very stylish. I was not. But last week on our Instagram Live, we talked about the color scheme of the book cover.
Yeah.
And how you were looking for clothes and accessories that complemented that. So
yeah, complement it. I don't wear a lot of red, so the cover is red. But there's some touches of red, pops of red, unexpected red, Liz. That's what I'm going for. Going for that. Thank you. I appreciate this.
Okay, everybody. Well, that's the story on the marriage sabbatical. Go get yours or several. We promise, Rachel, we promise you are going to enjoy reading this book. And Leigh, good luck out there.
Thanks, Liz. Okay. Thanks.